Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Educating Josh, where I, Luke Cutforth, We are recording this episode live at VidCon, and we have a very enthusiastic audience here to console me when I mess up. Where I, Luke Cutforth, aim to educate my friend Josh Winslade on the weird happenings of the confusing new world that we live in. And each week, I will bring in a very special guest to help me do just that. And this week, my guest is YouTube extraordinaire, Elle Mills.
Hello.
Yay.
Wow, I love that.
Elle, welcome to the podcast again. You have recorded with us once before.
Yes, I have.
Are you ready to educate Josh again?
I am so ready to educate Josh. I'm so excited, Josh.
Josh, are you scared?
Absolutely terrified.
All right, well, I think we'll just get on with it. Elle, could you please read us the first story of the week?
Yes, I can. Hold social networks responsible for child self-harm, says British charity. Things to know. Facebook could face fines of more than $2 billion for gross breaches of laws being proposed by campaigners aimed at stopping harm to children online. Being backed by Ruth Moss, whose daughter Sophie killed herself in 2014, age 13, having viewed images of suicide and self-harm on social networks, including Facebook and Instagram. Similarly, suicide victim Molly Russell's father started this year with a press campaign quote, "Instagram helped kill my daughter. The Royal Society for Public Health released a study in 2017 stating that social media may be fueling a mental health crisis in young people. So the question is, Josh, should social media companies be held responsible for their platforms damaging the mental health of their users?
Firstly, audience, what do you think? Should social media platforms be held responsible for damaging the mental health of their users? Yes or no? Hands up. Yes for hands up. Okay, so that's about a no hands up? Who has no idea? I like how, so for the audience at home, Josh has put his hand up. He has no idea. All right, well, Josh, on that question, 20 seconds, Josh, go.
I don't think the platform itself should be held responsible unless they're breaking the law in some way. So like flipping it on its head with YouTube and Article 13 and everything like that, content rights and copyright strikes and stuff, that's breaking the law. So there, I think YouTube should be held responsible. I completely agree with Article 13. I think, you know, I think it's a good thing and it's gone on for ages without being monitored. But in the case of this, it's different. This is someone that's, so this is self-harm and people that post pictures. I don't think Instagram can be held responsible for people that do that.
So I suppose what I'm asking here, or what Elle is asking, sorry to put words in your mouth, Elle, is around the idea of the should they be held responsible? You're saying only if they're breaking the law. I'm sort of asking, should there be a law? Like, do you think it's morally corrupt that a social media company would have practices in place, whether deliberately or non-deliberately, that could damage the mental health of
users? I think there's very few companies that exist in the world that go above and beyond what they're made to do by the law.
That's sad.
It's very, very, very sad. So I don't think it's morally corrupt. I think it's very accepted for them to do the bare minimum. If I owned a social media site, I don't think I'd let images of self-harm go up. I don't... Is there a positive thing with sharing those images for people that self-harm? Like, is there a... What does it do for them? I wouldn't know. I've never self-harmed. So it's like, why are the, is it to, you know, is it for support? Is it raising awareness? I think there's better ways of doing that, surely.
I think it's like a, it's a self-expression thing. It's like, if you are, if the idea of seeing pain is a truth to you, and you, and that's, it's like an art form. It doesn't have to be positive. It doesn't have to be.
I wouldn't call it art.
It's expressive.
Okay, but for me, it's more like someone's trying to go, this is what I'm going through. Someone, please help me, because it's such a an impactful image. If you're in a place where you feel the need to share that, then you're obviously going through something and are absolutely crying out for help and want someone to go, hey, I've seen this. And so that's your last, for me, for someone to do that, it's like, that's their last effort of going, hey, I'm doing this. Someone please stop me, or please help me, or just come to my aid a little bit. Because normally it's a hidden thing, right? It's like people don't want to express it and try and hide it. I think, I don't know, like violent images, nude images, pornographic images are all filtered. So why isn't something like that? That's quite an extreme.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think they should be held responsible in the sense that they should be more stricter with filtering that.
It's a graphic image.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big thing. And what's the age restriction on Instagram? Is there one?
13, I believe. You get some nods. That's good.
Okay.
I think one thing I should mention is that Instagram has announced that it will try and crack down on self-harm imagery on the platform.
Okay.
So that's sort of like a step, but it's taken a long time. Like, this has been an issue that's been raised. Like, the suicide that we were talking about in the introduction from Sophie was in 2014. And after that, they found a bunch of images on her Instagram account of, like, self-harm and suicidal messaging and things like that.
Right, so why wasn't she helped? Do you know what I mean? Like, if I saw a friend doing that with suicidal messages and self-harm images, I'd be around their house every single day trying to help them. I'd be, if they've got to that point, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't, her, like I said, her posting those images was then obviously her final kind of cry going, fuck's sake.
It may not be she was posting them though. It's very common that you're just absorbing this stuff. You're looking at it. You don't have to be posting it yourself. And if you're looking at it and going, and sort of absorbing this stuff and going, oh, that's what beauty is. Beauty is pain, for example. And then you get this image in your head of like that being a good thing to do to yourself. And to a certain extent, that's been promoted by the platform you're on. Okay. And monetized by the platform you're
but,
on.
But not situations. Being that person, being the person that isn't that person looking at that content. You are very capable of going, oh, this person needs help.
But you don't know they're looking at it necessarily. Elle, how do you feel about this stuff in terms of, on more specifically on the point of like, if a business is profiting off of, businesses are profiting, otherwise they're failing businesses. And part of their model destroys, it's like destroying the environment. It's like petrol companies destroy the environment, social media companies might destroy mental health. Uh-huh. Not deliberately, but they might.
Yeah, I know it's obviously a tough topic, but what my thing is, like, I do think they should be held responsible in the sense that they need to be aware that this is obviously affecting a lot of people and like it does have negative effects. But I just, what I'm reading in the first part is, what's the $2 billion, what's the money gonna do? Like, the fines. Like,
I mean, fines, I would say, are generally, that's the only way that businesses think.
Okay.
And so if you go, oh, we did this practice and we lost $2 billion, I guess we won't do that practice anymore or we'll go bankrupt.
Okay, in that sense, then yeah, maybe, actually. That's smart.
You can't put a company in jail. And so the only thing they think
okay,
about
so
is money.
Okay, so this is jail time, basically.
Right. But where do you think the responsibility lies in terms of what social media is in itself? So, for example, whose responsibility is it to either be on or not be on social media, if that makes sense? So, for example, Instagram is what Instagram is, Twitter is what it is. If you don't like it, you remove yourself. Like, you come off social media. If it's not healthy for you and you don't want to, you're the person that can control that and you take yourself out of the equation. I think you've done that recently.
Yes, I have, yeah.
That, to me, makes sense. That is someone that's going, I recognize that this isn't somewhere I want to be. I think what a lot of people are now trying to do is go to Twitter and say, hey, look, these people can't exist without your platform, feel like they have to be on it, and are then making Twitter and Instagram and Facebook conform to what makes it healthy for the person,
yeah,
as opposed to...
I do agree with that. I totally agree with what you're saying. But they do. So my thing is, there are young people on the platform.
Yeah.
And they allow 13-year-olds in, like 13 to 17, so minors, on the platform who are easily, very easily influenced.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they I don't know. I don't want to change the age to 18.
Well, there was a BBC documentary recently I was watching. For some reason, my head said, whilst I was doing the washing up. I don't know why that's relevant. maybe that I wasn't paying that much attention to it. But they were interviewing school kids, and they were saying, like, do you think it's possible to function as a teenager in your school society without social media? And without exception, they all said, no, it is not possible. And now that's not, I know that's not literally true, but in terms of...
I think it is.
It is. Well, it's true.
I think it is becoming literally true, though.
Yes.
Like, so when I was growing up, the kind of social pressures at school that I had weren't Instagram, they weren't Twitter, they weren't what messaging platform am I using. It wasn't how many WhatsApp groups am I a part of, which are things that I think people today think about and worry about. It was more, I don't smoke, I'm not cool, or it was kind of more physical things.
Yeah.
But today, I think absolutely, it's almost a literal thing that you can't survive without it,
yeah.
or at least survive and be socially acceptable.
So one of the things that I find very uncomfortable about modern social media is that this maybe will get a bit too complex, but it's something I think that people should understand, and I'm quite passionate about talking about it. Social media companies, the biggest ones, they these days don't necessarily write their own code. So when they, if they have the effect of, say, for example, that suicidal imaging or messaging or self-harm stuff is promoted on the platform, no one's necessarily made that decision. What happens within social media companies these days is you create a thing called like a machine learning algorithm, and you basically give it a task. For example, increase session time, which is the amount of time someone spends on the app.
Yeah.
And that machine will go off and it will try and achieve that by whatever means possible. And so, for example, if you give a computer the task increase session time, and the computer works out through no fault of its own, because it's just a computer, if I make all my users severely depressed, they spend more time on Instagram, right? No one's made that decision, but the effect is Instagram's increased depression rates. Instagram makes more money. Now, I'm not saying that.
Sound clip that bit out. Instagram.
No, I don't want to get sued by Instagram. So I'm not saying that's necessarily true, but that's what's going on. Is that you have a machine that, like, there's a great video online by Tom Scott where he talks about where if you give a computer a simple task, for example, increase human happiness, right, on average, the computer, you think that's a great thing, right? But the computer might then go, okay, well, what I'll do is I'll give all the people drugs so they're happy, and you've increased average human happiness. Or you kill all the sad people, and you've increased average human happiness, right? And so you have these, if you're employing these computers to sort of do your coding work for you, Mark Zuckerberg goes, increase ad revenue, and it has an unintended effect. Is that your responsibility? Right now, legally, it's not, but I think it should be.
Well, but to be honest, it's the responsibility of the watcher. So the computer can only act on the information it's given, right?
It can, yes. On the,
us as a populace, it's what we're watching that drives the data that makes those decisions. So we decide to watch something. So we're deciding what to tell the computer to push to other people.
Yes, but it's deciding that based on finding out vulnerabilities in our psychology. It works out without deliberately knowing how it's doing it. Oh, it serves like random things to people, and it goes, okay, picture of a cat, that increased session time by 1 minute. Picture of someone, like a little message saying, life is pointless, you should kill yourself.
Mm.
Increased session time, 10 minutes.
How many, people actually use the Explore tab on Instagram? Because I've never used it.
Some tentative hands.
A few. So that's what I mean. I think, especially on Instagram, I don't think that's applicable because I see the people's feeds that I want to see, the odd advert in my feed, and that's it kind of thing. Like I've never used the Explore tab. I get like Terry Crews naked dancing and stuff. Like when it, and I'm like, I don't want to see that.
Everyone nodded in the audience as if that's a thing I should have seen.
That is literally what was there when I went on to Explore. I'm like, okay, that's what I saw. And I was like, I don't need to go on there.
That threw me off, and now I forgot what I was going to say.
Are you just thinking about Terry Crews?
But it might be, for example, like you say, like you only follow the people you want to follow, for example, but you might follow all of your friends who use the Facetune filter and make their skin really smooth, and then you look at your pictures not having used the Facetune filter, and you go, oh, look, I look like crap.
Well, that's fine.
And the algorithm of Instagram has trained you to use Facetune.
I don't know. I think you're treating people as stupid there. You're saying that that 14-year-old is looking at that picture and doesn't know that there's a face filter there. They know more than you do. They've grown up with that.
The 14-year-old consciously does, but I think there are elements of everyone that see things and compare themselves to things without realizing what they're doing.
My question with that, though, is what do you want Instagram to do about it? Like, because if we start holding...
No beauty filters whatsoever.
Yeah, like, if we start holding them, like, Instagram or social media networks, whatever, held responsible for all these, like, things, like face tuning or self-harm and et cetera, then it's going to get to a point where we're not going to be able to post anything.
Yeah, and what happens if you flip it on its head, right? So before face filters and being able to, you know, just edit yourself on an app, the only people that could do that were celebrities who paid for photo shoots and were edited. So you're constantly seeing these celebrities with these beautiful photos that are edited. Now, actually, realistically, more people are realizing, oh, that's edited.
So it's the democratization of vanity.
Exactly.
Great.
It's now accessible to everyone.
I suppose what I'd like Instagram or these other companies to do, Elle, is that right now we live in an age where we're just setting computers rampant and they just do stuff without us understanding what they're doing. And then we go, not my fault, the computer did it. Right? I think that's a very bad way to set up.
You program that computer.
No, that's the point. That's exactly the point, is you don't program the computer.
But you decided to not program the computer.
Yes. So that, from that point of view, it is legally the responsibility of the company if the computer does something bad.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, that's not the law. The law right now is if your computer does something you didn't mean to, you can kind of get away with it.
I think going back to the question, I would put self-harm images in a similar category to pornographic and other similar images like that. But it's also different in a sense that person's not okay. They're not well. So it's not just a straight... I don't think it's even enough for Instagram to just go ban it. In fact, don't ban it. Allow it to be a place where it can happen, but immediately let someone know. Or do you know what I mean? Instead of just... Because otherwise, then you're just hiding it. That person is obviously going through something. That is... So just banning it, I wouldn't put it in the same category at all, actually, as a pornographic image. One's not okay for a child. The other one is a child going through something and a person that needs help. So help them. Don't hide them, mm-hmm. and don't condemn them either, I think. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah.
To Elle, it does.
To Elle, it does. Great.
He's
well.
Saying, like, if someone would post a self-harm photo, and then Instagram would just, like, the computer goes, okay, delete that.
Yeah.
And no one sees it.
Yeah.
But that person is asking for help, is basically what Josh is saying.
Instead of deleting it, it could remove it from other people's feeds and then automatically send that person a message that has the information for the top three free, talk advice centers or help advice centers for self-harm or something, or make that person feel valid and that there's support there and help.
All right, Josh. Well, in summary, should social media companies be responsible for their platforms damaging the mental health of users?
No, I think it lies on the individual, but I do think they should do more to help.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
All right, well, you can let us know what you think over on Twitter and our polls at Educating Josh. It is time for the second story of the week. That's my story. Does that sound weird now? Because I'm doing it in real life. Okay, cool. Okay, so my story comes from Vice. This is going to be a dividing one. And my story is YouTube is incentivizing vloggers like Shane Dawson to promote conspiracy theories. Here are the three things you need to know. Researchers are starting to understand how the structure of YouTube as a platform helps to push users to and to push creators to make extreme content which elicits a response from viewers. This is because the platform is designed to reward high engagement and watch time and content which makes people angry, scared, or believe they've discovered something secret.
Oh, Shane Dawson's content makes me very angry.
I know what Josh's opinion is going to be on this one. Last year... Guillaume? I should have looked up how to say this. Last year, Guillaume Chaslot, an ex-Google software engineer, discovered that an average YouTube user with no viewing history would frequently be pushed towards fake news or conspiracy videos by YouTube's own recommendation system. My question for you, Josh, is, should YouTube be controlling the spread of conspiracy theories and misinformation on their platform? 20 seconds, Josh. Go.
No, I don't think so at all. In fact, I kind of think it makes sense that with everything that's going on, conspiracy theories are becoming more popular. I think people are kind of waking up and realizing that not everything's the way it should be, or the way that everyone says it is, or the way the government wants to make you think it is, and that there's actually things that happen behind the scenes. I don't see that as a negative thing. It's like, that's what YouTube was for. What I remember, it was just a platform to do whatever you want and be open. And I remember conspiracy theories were popular in the beginning as well. It was the only place people could put content that wasn't going to get televised. And so I don't think it's a bad thing that they are. I think it's a bad thing that people like Shane Dawson are doing it, but that's kind of a personal opinion.
How do our audience feel about Shane Dawson's conspiracy documentaries? Do you watch them? They're amazing. I love them.
My problem with Shane Dawson is I don't know him as a person. He's probably a really lovely, wonderful guy.
He is lovely.
And Luke tells me he is very lovely. Has anyone seen Summer Heights High?
Yes.
Right. So it's like a parody. It's like a parody, massive parody program, where people are parodied. That would make sense. Shane Dawson is a parody of someone doing investigative documentaries. He's a parody of his own genre. He over-dramatizes things, he hypes things up, he makes drama where there is no drama. It's really not how it's done. He goes into things and goes, I'm not gonna be biased, and then he's extremely biased. and then is very biased, but then also, so for example, with the, who's the American YouTuber that is Logan Paul. So,
oh wow, like a hiss from the audience.
In that document, right? So you don't like Logan Paul? Shane loved him by the end. Did you notice that? So that's not a good documentary filmmaker.
That was Jake Paul.
Jake Paul. Ah, okay. Same thing. See, they're all the same. by the end of that documentary, to be a good documentary maker, you've got to stay impartial. And at the beginning, he hated him. He absolutely hated him, and he was like, oh my God, he was like over-dramatizing everything, and I was like, oh my God, what am I watching? And then by the end, he was like, oh my God, he's lovely, I'm so sorry, and oh, his poor mum, and I did all that to his mum, and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, that's not how you make a documentary. That is not an unbiased way of making a documentary. So I think, yeah, we're sensationalizing the wrong people when it comes to it. Like, the people, and this is something I really honestly believe that you guys should be basing your opinions on and informing yourself on, is are people that give you information and don't give you an opinion, where they actually give you truth and fact and allow you then, based on what affects you and what matters to you, to make your own opinion and not present it in a biased way. Do you not agree with that?
I do agree with that. I don't think that's what Shane Dawson's doing.
No, it's not. It's not. And that's okay. That's not his fault. He just doesn't know what he's doing.
Al, how do you feel about this?
Oh my God. We're not about Shane Dawson? Or
No. I don't want you to go and... Okay. Do you know Shane? I don't want you to badmouth Shane. I love Shane. Shane's fantastic.
Yeah.
This is more to do with the platform. It's a very platform-based episode, this, really, about responsibility of companies. And one of the things that was found by this Google engineer who helped to code the YouTube algorithm is he found that if you went to YouTube and just clicked the first video and kept clicking the up next recommended video, eventually you'd end up at like some kind of far-right conspiracy video. And he told Google this. I'm going off memory here, but he told Google this, and Google just apparently weren't really... that responding, right? They sort of didn't see an issue with it. Now, YouTube have said that they are going to try and stop promoting conspiracy theories, right? But I went onto this website that shows you the most recommended YouTube videos of the day. This was Valentine's Day on supposedly the non-conspiracy promoting YouTube. They were hiding it, discoveries that could rewrite history, anonymous. Deep State Predictions 2019, Ancient Portal to Another Dimension, are they hiding it? Debunking a Century of War Lies, and The Beginning of the End Starts in Venezuela, World War III is Inevitable. This is the stuff where if you just click on the homepage.
Just to highlight though, even the way you read those titles out is influencing the way people are taking those titles. That was unbiased. If you'd have said it in a calm manner.
It was biased.
Yeah, it was biased.
Okay,
yeah,
I'll try and say it.
That wasn't unbiased.
The beginning of the end starts in Venezuela. World War III is inevitable.
It's less dramatic.
Yes, like, but it's still ridiculous, Josh. Sorry, L, go ahead.
I actually think YouTube should be controlling it. I just think there's so many people who are easily influenced online.
What
people
about?
On the internet are so, like, and, like, cancel culture is just, so if it, there, it's a conspiracy
What's
theory.
Cancel culture?
Like, you're canceled. Like, Josh, you say something about, I don't know, whatever you would say on Educating Josh that people have a problem with, and then you're automatically cancelled, you can never do anything ever again, your family are bombarded with hate for having raised such a dreadful human being, etc. That's cancel culture.
It can be as simple, it can be as simple as getting a tattoo of a tattoo and everyone, one person being like, oh, I hate this person, and then everyone just going, oh, I also hate this
okay,
person.
Okay, that's not okay.
Like that. And I think conspiracy theories is like the same thing. One person says something and everyone jumps on it, and then it could be really damaging depending on who or what it's about.
So when Shane Dawson calls you a psychopath?
Yes.
That can be damaging if it's not done right and in an unbiased way.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. And I suppose that's sort of the, it's kind of similar to the first story in that the platform is set up to a certain extent to reward sensationalization. So whatever gets you to sort of angrily comment or share it and go, I hate this video, that's what gets pushed forward. And that's good for YouTube, but it's not necessarily good for humanity.
Yeah, now, but we're the ones making that decision. Yeah. It's the viewer that dictates what's popular. It's like people going, it's like, oh, I watch this all the time, but I don't want to see any more of it. It's like, no, that's what's popular right now. I think I've got my own conspiracy now, I think.
Oh, God.
Whew, well, at least we'll blow up on YouTube.
The reason conspiracy theories are so popular is they're trying to inundate us with... The government is paying YouTube to inundate us with conspiracy theories so that the real ones aren't found out.
Right.
What about that?
Okay, that's
I actually have heard that theory. Is that bad?
I want you to make a 2-hour documentary series on just that statement.
I think I'd be really biased.
This is the thing as well, is one thing I think about with this is that, okay, imagine we give YouTube sort of go-ahead as a group, as all of us, we go, it's a good thing that YouTube controls conspiracy theories, right? But some conspiracies will be true. Conspiracies exist.
Like my conspiracies.
Like Josh's conspiracy. They like think bad people do bad things, and some of those bad people will be in government or police or whatever. And so to a certain extent, we might be giving tacit consent for YouTube to control our access to information. And so like YouTube, as you said, Josh,
there's
at the beginning...
That. You just don't use the trending tab, or, you know, you look at your subscribers and the people you subscribe to and you just use the search bar as opposed to just, you know, continuously consuming what's in your trending or what's in your recommended. Yeah. You can just kind of cancel it all out, really. Use it as a database.
You can.
That's what it is, really. It's just got... to be fair, all YouTube are doing, right, is some guy or at some point had an idea and I'm going to host videos... They've started hosting videos, and then it's become so popular so quickly. Like, the stats on how many hours of YouTube is watched a week is insane. It dwarfs television. So it's spent so long being unregulated that it doesn't have the same kind of procedures as television. Like, I work in film and TV. It's so strict. Like, showing self-harm in a film is an instant 18. But Instagram isn't regulated like that. YouTube is barely regulated in that way. It's like, it's crazy that these platforms are just able to do it. Whereas film, TV, it kind of grew and it's been regulated. There's authoritative bodies and it all kind of makes sense. But then YouTube gets like Article 13 comes into play and they go, holy crap, this is going to be really hard. The problem YouTube has is it's almost impossible for them to regulate the content on their platform because of how much gets uploaded. Rather than be honest about it and talk about it, they like sent out emails to creators. They were like, they asked creators that, and featured them on the YouTube. These people are against Article 13, and automatically swayed you by having your favorite creators against Article 13, where really all Article 13 is saying, if Dodie covers a song that she doesn't own the rights to, normally, in a normal world, you would go and contact the person that owns the rights to that song and say to them, hey, can I use your song? It's a great song. And so much of the time, you can cover it. They'll go, yeah, we give you permission. You don't have to do that on YouTube. You can cover it and nothing happens. You can't monetize it.
You can.
That responsibility with Article 13 is going to shift to YouTube. YouTube have to make sure that there's no copyrighted material on their platform. The reason that's good is because YouTube has enough money to pay for those fines, whereas Dodi doesn't, or someone with 300 subs doesn't have that money. And that's why the kind of people are upset, because it's like, well, we can't chase these people, but they are breaking the law. And like, I find it really funny when people are upset with Article 13, yet how many friends that are photographers get really annoyed when someone posts a photo they've taken and they're not credited? I see people blow up on Twitter about that. They're like, oh, thanks, another photo that I've taken, I'm not credited, that's my livelihood. And it's a big thing, and you defend that person. That's all Article 13 is about, and I think... So that's what I mean, is that all these platforms have blown up so quickly. Like, Elle, you got very big very quickly. Your content is amazing.
Oh, thank you.
So, but...
I don't know a single person in YouTube who doesn't hate Elle because she's so good at what she does.
It's ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous. And Elle's soundtracking on her videos is amazing, but she doesn't monetize them. She's not taking money from the person that's created that video. It's adding to her story. She's used it in a way that's great. And that would still be okay with articles. She just can't monetize it, and that's great. Mm-hmm. And you didn't care. You didn't care that you weren't getting any money. You didn't claim to.
Yeah.
And so it's like... people just need to kind of realize that it's a dangerous platform and it does need to be regulated. So kind of accept things like Article 13, change them a little bit. There's some stuff that's iffy with it, but...
I suppose the thing I find interesting about this is that, like, I haven't really... like, I watched a bit of the Shane Dawson conspiracy stuff to research for this, but in general, I've avoided it because I feel it's probably not the best thing for me and it's a sensationalist, right? And some people love that, and some of this audience have I met some people outside before we recorded who were like, oh yeah, I love Shane. I was like, oh, okay. I'm going to be the minority in this argument. But I suppose this is the thing, is that it's not YouTube's fault that you guys like Shane Dawson's conspiracy theories, because they're exciting and a bit scandalous, right? And similarly, it's not YouTube's fault that I don't like it. And so maybe I'm coming around to the idea that actually you have to change people and what they enjoy,
yes,
rather than expecting a YouTube, like a website that is basically a big Dropbox for videos.
It's not their responsibility to kind of go, wait, no, this is too sensationalist, we're going to take this off. Do you know what I mean? I do think it's where the responsibility lies for me is that there's a lot of things we're taught in school at the moment that are completely irrelevant. I think that, you know, classes in social media, in YouTube and stuff like that would be amazing to the average, to everybody in the kind of world that we're living in now. And I think that that's where the responsibility lies to me personally. If the whole idea is that you need to be educated enough so that when you're watching a Shane Dawson video, you realize this is sensationalized, he is not a trained journalist. That responsibility isn't YouTube's responsibility. It comes before that. Like, it should be a part of an educational program, I believe. And that's where I think it lies. If the whole idea of school is to leave school with the knowledge and ability to make the right decisions for you, then that is failing massively at the moment. Not YouTube. Don't blame YouTube.
Okay. Yeah, honestly, I'm like, trust me, like I don't really like blaming like social media platforms or anything. I do think there could be a bit of like regulation or something.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But I never like would like fully blame YouTube for conspiracy theories being popular or anything like that. But yeah, sure, I agree with you.
What if though, like for example, we have a conspiracy theory, any conspiracy theory, right, which leads to the country being overthrown by its people.
Oh,
right? Just an example, because that's how big YouTube is. It's got billions of users every day, right? And so, maybe not, but it's got billions of users, not necessarily every day. But like, imagine if you have a series of ideas that cause the destabilization of a country or the world, which is essentially what's happened within the Brexit debate. Whether you agree with Brexit or not Brexit, social media companies have profited off the fragmentation of our society. Because they've been running political ads, which they earn money from, for example.
If you're going to go to war with your country because you have seen a YouTube video...
I am.
Then there's a bigger problem here. And like I said, I think it goes back to school.
Yeah, I thought you'd say that.
I do think a conspiracy video, like, you might be underestimating its power. I do think, like, just, like, internet culture, like, it could, like... I think it could get to that point, like maybe a little less, but like, you know what I mean? Like, it could get to a really bad point.
Not a single video, but no, yeah, the idea.
I completely agree with you, but I think that...
Can we just like talk about, like, remember like the interview, the movie, the interview with...
Yeah,
like
Seth
how
Rogen.
Seth Rogen, didn't that almost start a war?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, like that was a comedy movie.
Yeah.
So like a conspiracy video, 100%, I feel like could do that.
I think Josh's point though is that the sorry for speaking for you, but I think I sort of agree with
this.
You
do all the time. It's
I think the issue is that the conditions already existed through which you believed the conspiracy theory and were ready, and you were set up to be angry at your government or be angry, and so it's not, the video was like the spark, but something else could have sparked it, and you were already in a state because you weren't maybe educated on the way that the internet works or the way machine learning works or whatever. You were already in that state, and it would have happened anyway, and you can kind of blame Shane Dawson if you like, but it's not really Shane Dawson's fault.
No, it's not. It's not his fault at all. But I think...
Do you think, though, for example, Shane Dawson has a responsibility that he actually checks this stuff?
Well,
because like
there's a code of conduct like actual journalists have.
Yes.
And he's not.
Are you calling Shane Dawson not an actual journalist?
Well, yeah, multiple times. Journalism exists where to do the work that kind of the police can't. Police enforce the law. Journalism expose corruption. That's what journalism is for me. My mum's a journalist. It's what she does. She's a writer. She left journalism because it changed. So... it became clickbaity. Like even the Wall Street Journal and PewDiePie. And when I saw that, I was like, "That was a newspaper that I respected and that I thought I can read that." The Guardian hiding behind it does surprise me sometimes. And I get it. Like the world's changing. The Guardian is a great platform for stories. But it's not going to be a platform if it doesn't exist, because things like Lad Bible and other stuff is becoming more popular. So it has to keep up to have a voice. But by trying to keep up, they're losing their voice and they're becoming less less moral, in my opinion.
I had a thing with The Guardian where I subscribed to support The Guardian, gave them some money. And then literally the next month they wrote this article going, "Zoella is destroying child literacy." And I was like, you have a choice here. Either you're clickbait media or you ask me to subscribe to support free journalism. You can't do both.
Whether she wrote that book or not, aside, I've heard some things, she's still got a lot of people reading. Like, why are you going to condemn that? As you're the Guardian, you're pro-literature. I don't get it. You're going, oh, because they don't... Anyway, it's interesting. But going back to your comment, El, the only thing I would say is I could definitely be underestimating it, but you could also be overestimating it, because there's a bubble that exists on the internet, but there's... How many people in the world? Like 7 billion? 8 billion?
Nearly 8 billion, yeah.
Nearly 8 billion people in the world. Internet and this thing that a lot of you in this room and you and I see every day hang around with some of the people that we know... They think like the internet is like everything, and what it's a tiny community of people that watch like Shane Dawson and stuff. Like, the power that they actually have in comparison to the real world is very small, in my opinion. Joe Suggs quite big, right, on the internet?
Yes.
Yeah.
He went on to Strictly and everyone went, "Who the hell is that?" And that's the world kind of reacted.
That's
like
true that individual creators may have small platforms, but for example, I think it's not necessarily debatable that the reason why we have the Brexit vote won, not that there was people voting for Brexit, but the reason why it got over the 50% mark was because of a well-targeted social media campaign. And so while Joe Sugg might not be known to the world, Facebook is. Most people in this country will be on Facebook. 2 billion people in the world are on Facebook out of, 8 billion, but a lot of those people are not in our country.
Yeah, so, you know, Facebook ads were targeted at the right people to sway their vote. What Facebook's business model is, we make money by selling adverts. That's how they make money. It's not how they started. It's how they make money now. You can't then go, well, you took money and had an advert and you targeted different people. Like, that's what Facebook is. You have to, anyone that makes their decision of who they're voting for based off what they've seen. I'm quite left wing on Facebook, believe it or not. And so naturally, the people around me and the people I choose to be friends with on Facebook are very left wing. And so I'm convinced, because my whole feed is going left, 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 left. I'm like, oh yeah, we've got this. It's a landslide. And then it doesn't happen because that's my bubble. That's my personal bubble. And your bubbles are all going to be, you know, you're going to get along with people that think similarly to you. And, you know, you can't use Facebook as that. I just don't think it works.
Well, in conclusion, Josh, should YouTube or social media companies be controlling the spread of conspiracy theories or misinformation on their platform?
No, conspiracy theories are great.
All right. Well, you can let us know what you think over on Twitter and our polls at Educating Josh. It is time for the quick fire round. Dun, dun, dun. Oh, that is the quickfire music. Nice. All right, thanks, Jack. All right, well, these quickfires are for both Josh and Elle. Quickfire one, Prince Philip will not be prosecuted for the Sandringham car crash after it was decided it was not in the public interest. Is this totally fair ruling or just another conspiracy?
No, he should completely be. He shouldn't have been driving in the first place.
Elle, do you know who Prince Philip is?
No.
All right, question two. A British woman who ran away to Syria as a 15-year-old to join Islamic State has begged to be allowed to return to live a quiet life with her soon-to-be-born baby. Do you think she should be allowed back in unpunished?
Oh my God.
We're on ISIS now, guys.
That's so heavy.
Sorry.
Yes, because if you don't allow people to make a wrong decision and then be accepted when they realize they've made a bad choice, then you're not going to allow growth and open-mindedness.
Agreed.
Okay. Cool. Quickfire three. Great. Donald Trump has declared a national emergency in order to pay for his border wall, and Twitter has erupted after the announcement was made by Press Secretary Sarah Sanders using a screenshot of her announcement on her iPhone Notes app. By the way, I do want to add to this. You know when you...
Wait. So people are upset about how she announced it, yeah. Not the fact that there's going to be a wall.
Yeah, yeah. But I just want to...
That's ridiculous.
You know when you go and crop a picture on your iPhone,
yeah.
And you accidentally like draw a little line with the markup tool? This announcement of a national emergency had a little black splodge on it where she'd accidentally...
No.
Anyway, do you think this is a sign we are in the social media age of politics or that the most powerful country in the world is currently run by people who have no idea what they're doing?
Both.
Both.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough.
Both.
Cool. And the good news story of the week. This Valentine's Day, wildlife parks and zoos from around the world took to Twitter in an attempt to one-up each other by coming up with the best romantic puns. I'd like to share some of these with you. L, may our love never tapir off. Josh, tell that special someone you've been chicken them out all year.
No.
Rhino, someone who really likes you. Without you, I have no porpoise.
I like that one.
Single, I'll take you out. And finally, it's Valentine's
owl.
Day.
He said owl.
Sorry, I'll take
I
you out.
I got it eventually.
It's Valentine's Day. Will you Galapago on a date with me?
What?
Sorry.
Galapago?
What?
Galapago, like...
What's a Galapago?
I don't actually know. Well, Josh, I don't know about you, but I think if someone used those zoo pickup lines on me, I'd say they're a keeper.
Is that yours?
Yeah, that's mine.
Oh, that was very good. I like that one.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like that. That was good.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Educating Josh. Thank you to Josh. Thank you to our audience at VidCon. And thank you so much to Elle for being on the podcast
with us.
Don't forget to follow us on Twitter or Instagram at Educating Josh. Where there'll be polls and content from each of today's topics. And we'd love to hear your thoughts. Thank you so much for coming to listen to this episode. And thank you for listening at home. Goodbye. Say goodbye, Josh.
Bye.
Oh, goodbye. Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.